Surprise, the returns reported by mutual funds aren't actually earned by mutual fund investors. Mad Money Machine. Show 107. Middle of April. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me. This is Paul Douglas Boyer here on the Mad Money Machine, show 107, after the Bermuda trip. First of all, I want to tell you that I'm so very proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors, indexfundsadvisors@ifa.com. And I want to tell you, first of all, advertising on the Mad Money Machine does work. Mark Ebner at Index Funds Advisors tells me that, yes, indeed, people are contacting Index Funds Advisors and are signing up for an account with them to help them manage their financial freedom. And I am glad that that is working for Index Funds Advisors, and I hope you contact them and sign up for an account with them. Let them handle your account and manage your financial freedom. All right, on with the show. As you can hear, I'm a little bit out of breath, and this is a little different method of recording the show this time. Today is such a beautiful day. It is probably 70 degrees, cloudless sky at 4:07 on Wednesday, the day after tax day. And I'm somewhere in the middle of Loudoun County, Virginia, walking down a path around some neighborhood. You can hear maybe my shoes crunching against the rocks on this path. So I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone, and that is find some quiet time in which I can record the show and get some exercise. So come and walk with me. It'll be like we're walking together, and I'm talking with you about some things that I hope you'll find interesting. And what I'd like to do, I'll edit this when I get back home. And what I'm going to do is, first of all, I'm going to talk about my Bermuda trip, our Bermuda trip, I should say. And if you're not interested in our Bermuda trip, skip forward until you hear some music playing. I don't know what the music is going to be exactly just yet, but I'll put some music in there as a gap filler so that you'll know when I'm done talking about Bermuda. But I hope you'll stay with me, because there were some interesting things that happened out of my trip. It was our 15th anniversary, and we wanted to do something where we didn't have to fly somewhere and go someplace where we thought it was relatively safe. And I don't want to get into describing places that we didn't think were safe, but we thought Bermuda would be a safe place, and it was. And before I get into it, I do want to thank my mom, who came out to take care of things while we were away. Very much appreciated. Thank you very much for doing that for us. She also fixed a pot of something for us to eat when we got back. It was a pot of chicken taco soup. Had chicken and a number of beans and vegetables in it. And it was absolutely fantastic. We'll have to get the recipe for that and make some more of that, I think. All right. So we went to Bermuda. It was a week-long cruise, though, to Bermuda. That was part of the safety, is we felt that cruising on a ship would be safer than flying on a plane. And I know that you'll disagree with that, because airplane travel has shown to be so very safe. Much safer than driving the 4 hours that we drove to New Jersey to embark the ship. We got on Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines, found a really great deal, sort of pre-season travel, and that's why we took the cruise in early April, whereas our anniversary is until next week. So, if you've ever cruised out of New Jersey, it's right across the waterway from the Statue of Liberty is where it pulls out. And the way it works is you drive up, you park for a second, and the porter comes out and unloads your bags, and then you drive off again to the actual parking lot, then go through customs and so forth. So I drove my car up, the one with the Mad Money license plate on it. Sure enough, we pull up, and the porter, who's from New Jersey, says, "Ah, Mad Money, you Jim Cramer?" I said, "No, I'm not Jim Cramer, but people say I look like him." "Yeah, you sure do. I watch the show all the time." I said, "Well, what I do is a show that I talk about his stock picks and so forth." And he says, "Oh, well, you're going to have trouble in the next few years. The only thing that's going to make any money in the next few years is going to be guns, cocaine, and brothels." He was predicting apparently doomsday scenario on the economy, I believe. Of course, you may have seen the New York Times article talked about survivalism as the new thing. And I agreed with him that, yeah, times are going to be tough, but stick with it in the long, long term and you'll be fine. In fact, there's a book out by Barton Biggs, and I'm going to have trouble recalling the title, something about war, wealth, and another W.
Wisdom.
And in there he talks about all the big events in the 20th century and how equities did during those big events like World War II and other events. And in the conclusion, interestingly enough, here's what he says. He says that being in equities is one of the best places to be, and being in index funds is the best place to be in equities. And I thought that was very interesting. And I might have to look into that book. I read, what I was doing is I was reading a little bit of it on Amazon's search inside the book feature. But I want to get back to the cruise ship story and the trip to Bermuda. The way the cruise worked is we pull out of New Jersey, and there's a day, one full day of sailing the Atlantic. And we had a cabin with a balcony on it, and you could go on the balcony and you look out over the ocean. And being at any one particular place in the Atlantic is not much different than being in any other place in the Atlantic. There's water as far as the eye can see. But on Sunday night, the water was so rough that my wife couldn't sleep because she heard the clothes in the closet sliding back and forth on the coat hangers, on the steel rod in the cabin. It wasn't enough to knock things off the tables or anything, but a lot of people apparently were feeling seasick, and the crew talked about even some of the crew weren't used to that level of motion on the ship. So we did indeed have rough seas the first night and into the second day, people stumbling all over the ship trying to get from one place to the other. And it was a bit chilly, not pleasant enough to be laying outside by the pool, but of course on a cruise ship they have a number of things to keep you occupied, and shows and things which we did enjoy. Then Tuesday morning, you wake up, and the ship pulls into the harbor at Bermuda. And of course we wanted to get up and get out on the deck, and we were there in time to see it as we passed this island of Bermuda. Bermuda sits way out in the Atlantic, just parallel pretty much with North Carolina, actually. And I think it's about 20 miles long and maybe just a few miles wide, a thin, long island out in the Atlantic. Wouldn't be the Mad Money Machine without talking about the money aspect of it. Their currency is pegged to the dollar, so you can go into the shops and things and buy things with your U.S. currency, and occasionally you'll get change in Bermuda coins. And I made the point of getting a Bermuda dollar to add to my international coin collection. And what we did is we got off the ship as early as we could on Tuesday morning, lined up with all the other people that were getting off, and we ran, and I do mean literally ran, we like doing that, to the moped rental place. And they had a long line of red mopeds with black seats, little motor scooters. They could hold either, you get them with one person or a two-seater. We decided to get the two-seater. I'd be the driver. It has a little basket on the back. You can put our backpacks in and so forth. And that would get us around the island. Well, it did start out nice and sunny that day, even though it was kind of chilly. Mid-60s, I'd say, to start. Sunny in the sense that it was partly cloudy, I guess. We were one of the first people at the moped rental place. What they do is they have you go around a little test loop to make sure you're roadworthy. Make sure you learn how to drive the thing. There have been a number of accidents and even deaths of people who rent these mopeds in Bermuda. So we wanted to make sure that we were capable of driving the thing. And as I'm walking here, the path I'm taking, I've come to a creek that's too wide to cross. The path goes on the other side, but it looks like it's only good for a four-wheel drive vehicle. So I guess I'll turn back. So anyway, the point of the story is we were going to rent these mopeds. We wanted to go to rounds, maybe some of the places where the tourist buses didn't go, you know. We wanted to see the places that not all the other tourists go to. We did go to Horseshoe Bay. Everybody said, oh, I got to go to Horseshoe Bay. We saw that one first, and we kept driving around the coast. And what we thought was we would go to St. George's, which, as it turns out, was completely the opposite side of the island. 20-mile drive, as you know. We made a wrong turn, though, and we ended up in Hamilton, Bermuda, which is sort of centrally located, the capital of Bermuda. And as it turns out, it just started to sprinkle. And so we decided to park our mopeds in a long line of moped parking area. Pulled the moped into this parking area in my short pants and backed up just a bit as I was parking our moped into the muffler of the moped next to me, which was hot. And yes, don't go, ooh, but I burnt my leg. Still have a Bermuda tattoo on the back of my right leg. And I guess I'll put Neosporin on that to make that heal. So we are in Hamilton, Bermuda now at the shops and things, trying to keep dry. And sitting under a canopy, a woman comes out and says, oh, I'm so sorry about your trip. You know, we're obviously tourists. She said, if you want to do something fun, you might want to go to the Bermuda Underwater Exploration Institute, BUEI. And it was a museum that's just about a quarter mile down the street from Hamilton. And we said, sure, sounds like fun. We did do that. And they had some interesting exhibits, like a nice shell collection from all around the world, and particularly from around Bermuda. But what was really interesting is they had a section about artifacts from shipwrecks found around Bermuda. And as I was looking at some of the exhibits, an elderly gentleman, I'll say, not an old gentleman, but an elderly gentleman came by, and he was giving sort of a tour to two other young ladies. And he was explaining how some of the shipwrecks were found and what they did with the findings. And as it turns out, he had this jacket on with the logo of Odyssey on it. And Odyssey is a publicly traded company that searches the ocean floor for things like shipwrecks. And it was fascinating. They talked about the U.S. Republic ship that sailed off the coast, I believe, of South Carolina and sank with all of these gold coins. And this was back at the Civil War times, I believe. And he said that the ship was still insured. And so his company, the Odyssey, went to that insurance company saying, we would like to go try to find that ship, and we will give you $1 million for the rights to it. And the insurance company kind of laughed and said, oh, everybody's been looking for that ship, but we'll take your $1 million. And so the insurance company got their million. And as it turns out, Odyssey did find the ship. And they had some equipment to go down deep into the ocean and pull up. The first thing they found was an old toilet. And the next thing they found was a pile of gold coins. And they told the guys running the salvaging expedition, don't pull anything up. Just look. Don't touch. Well, they couldn't help themselves. They used some kind of claw to grab some of these gold coins and put them into that toilet and bring the toilet up. And it turns out every single one of the coins, the gold coins that they clawed with this thing, got scratched in some way. And what they did with all the other gold coins, they went back later and they used some sort of pneumatic device that grabbed the coin, maybe using suction or something, and brought them up unharmed, unscratched. But as it turns out, the collectors hear about this story, and those few gold coins that actually have a scratch on them are now worth more than all the other gold coins individually. So a lot of people enjoying the history of that shipwreck. He says that there was also some coal aboard this ship, and what they do is they put a lump of coal inside of a wooden box along with a DVD about the exploration, and they sell that lump of coal in this little wooden box and the DVD for something like $100 to all of these collectors that are so interested in Civil War memorabilia. And he went on to describe some other shipwrecks, one of a Spanish shipwreck, a fleet of 16 ships that went down and deposited a mound of gold at the bottom of the ocean, and how they are on the cusp of finding that, but they're in a battle between Spain and England and themselves on who has the rights to it. And we did see him and talk to him a little bit afterwards when we left, and I said, where can I find out more? And he said, shipwreck.net. It's where you can learn more about the Odyssey Company and some of their scavenging expeditions. Well, a cruise line is in it to make money, that is for sure. There are no end of ways for them to sell you things on board the ship. One of the worst is bingo. I guess on a cold, rainy day, everybody wants to play bingo. We went down at 3 o'clock or so into this large auditorium, and you pay either $20 for 3 cards or $30 for 6 cards, actually a sheet of paper, and you get your chance to play in one of 4 bingo games. They'll play 4 bingo games. And so I imagine there were about 300 people in this auditorium playing bingo this day. Therefore, on that one particular bingo session, which lasted maybe an hour, the cruise line made $7,500 on average, right? If you figure $25, somewhere between the 20 and the 30. I think most people were playing a 6-card game, but I'll just use 25. They made $7,500. How much money do you think they paid out to these people? Well, the first game paid out about $180. The second game, I think, paid out a tour of the bridge. The fourth game had a jackpot round. Somebody won within the first 47 numbers. Of course, they did not. It wasn't even close. But even the jackpot was in the low thousand, maybe $1,000 or $2,000 for the winner. Well, there were 4 rounds of bingo across the ship. That's $30,000 worth of bingo. And they paid out $1,000 or $2,000. Pretty good profit margin. I don't know what the churches make on bingo, but the ship sure made a lot of money. Well, when you go on the cruise like this, there's no end to eating. You can eat all the time. You can call room service anytime you want. You can go to breakfast, it's unlimited. You can go to lunch, it's unlimited. You can even go for a sit-down dinner at your regularly scheduled dining table. And you can keep asking them to bring more stuff out. If you're ever hungry on a ship, you're doing something wrong. So now what do you do when you get back home? Well, I have this invention. And let me first tell you the background of something else. There's something I read about in the Wall Street Journal a year ago called a miracle fruit. And I don't know if you've heard about this. It's grown in a particular region somewhere in Southwest Africa. And if you chew on this little berry of a thing, the fleshy part of it, get that on your tongue, then anything bitter that you eat, like a lemon or a lime or rhubarb, tastes sweet. It's an amazing chemical reaction with your tongue. And they say if you put this miracle fruit on your tongue and then eat a strawberry, it's so intense. It's like the sweetest candy that you could ever imagine. I've never had the pleasure of eating a miracle fruit before. They say the effect lasts between 30 minutes and a couple hours. But it sounds like a neat thing. But when you go on a cruise ship like this, what I need is the opposite of the miracle fruit, and I'll call it the dread fruit. I need something where when I eat it and put it on my tongue, that it has the opposite effect. Everything I eat tastes either moldy or burnt or just nasty. What a great diet plan that would be, right? For the dreadfruit. Well, that's all I have to tell you this time about the cruise. If I think of something else, I'll let you know next time. Let's play that music so everybody can come back and listen to the rest of the show.
On the bus the other morning, I read the Daily Rag. It gave me a list of all the foods that have suddenly turned bad. There's been a government warning, we'll all end up obese. So the scientists and the dietitians, they tell me that I should eat a couple sticks of celery, a little lettuce leaf. That really ain't enough food for this hungry boy to eat. I like my tea, I like my lunch, I like my hearty meat. But that pizza gave me all the food, it's my bum cheek. No more healthy eating, it's not the way for me. There's no way I'm eating all your lentils and your seeds. They say it is a health risk, but I really don't give a jack. And happy. No more fizzy pop, no more chips, less red meat. Eat oily fish and raw veg, be like Gillian McKeith. Well, there ain't no way I'm letting her tell me which food to choose. And there certainly ain't no way I'm letting her go poking around my poos.
All right, so I don't want to talk too much about gold anymore. I know people are thinking I'm weirding out talking about gold, and I am still reading a book called Gold, The Once and Future Money, and it talks about how gold is, in fact, money. There's a part of it that tries to explain what the Federal Reserve is doing and how they handle and manage liquidity and how they handle money and the liquidity of money. And in a little paragraph in there, they talk about an example. They say, what's the exchange rate between a dollar and a quarter? Well, you get 4 quarters for $1. They say, well, what about if quarters are in short supply and you're at a parking meter and you really need change for your dollar? The dollar won't fit into the parking meter, so you want some quarters. If quarters are in short supply, you would probably be willing to give someone a dollar. Or let me just say, you may be willing to give someone a dollar in exchange for 3 quarters. Ah, see, in which case the exchange rate between a dollar and a quarter has changed. Well, I saw an article out on coinflation.com, which I keep track of, talking about how, yes, in fact, in some countries, coins are getting scarce. Let me read to you just a few paragraphs about this one. Says India is taking constructive measures to resolve its coinage crisis, working with the General Post Office to get sufficient coinage into circulation. In early March, the Reserve Bank of India and the Post Office agreed to a pilot program through which the Post Office would be allowed to exchange coins, something the local banks have failed to do. The program will make 1 and 2 rupee coins available in exchange for banknotes at specific post offices on a 3-month trial program. The post office hopes to extend the program to 15 more post offices in the specific region there, an area where the coin shortage has been chronic since many of the coins are smuggled over the border into neighboring Bangladesh. Once in Bangladesh, the coins are sold for more than their face value, with many of the coins made into razor blades and other commodities which are worth more than the face value of the coins. And finally, it says, without the assistance of the post office, many merchants in India are forced to use street vendors acting as middlemen to obtain sufficient coinage to be used in commerce. These vendors make a profit off the exchange between coins and paper bank notes. Well, the book I was reading about gold takes this to the next level and talks about the exchange rate then between paper currency and gold, and how the nations that operate a paper currency, they have to keep a currency in proper supply relative to gold for the value to be held in the paper currency. And I won't go into any more about that. Let me instead turn to a TV show that we've been watching recently. With all the interest of what's happening in our Constitution and trying to get back to what the founding fathers intended this country, how they intended this country to operate. A fantastic program that's on HBO. You know what I'm going to say? John Adams. It's a series in 7 parts shown on Sunday nights. They showed part six just last Sunday. And what a fantastic series this is. Has Paul Giamatti as John Adams. And David Morse plays George Washington, or played, I guess he's now deceased in the part six. But he did a very fantastic impression, I guess, of George Washington, complete with failing teeth. And if you can get access to a copy of John Adams, I definitely recommend it. Worth your while. Well, one of our gurus on Mad Money Machine has resigned his job and has been taking a new post. I think he's going to actually go work for a bank or an investment company or something, make more money. And the guru is, of course, Jonathan Clements. No longer will be writing for the Wall Street Journal. I think after 1,008 columns, his column has come to an end. And he said, if you haven't liked my previous 1,008 columns, you will like this one. It's my last. And in this last column, he asks the question, what is the reason for all of this saving and investing? The short answer is, you save now so you can spend later. But what do you spend your money on? People dream of endless leisure and bountiful possessions. Unfortunately, after a few months, endless leisure often seems like endless tedium. Similarly, you might imagine that a flashy new car or fancy new home will be your ticket to eternal bliss. But a year after you make your purchase, the thrill will likely be gone, and you'll be lusting after something else. My point is, he says, the rich life of popular imagination is no great shakes. But he does believe that wealth can deliver 3 key benefits. Number 1, if you have money, you don't have to worry about it. Now, this isn't guaranteed. There are lots of rich folks who agonize constantly and needlessly about their finances. Still, if you save diligently, you should be able to reach a point where money worries are relatively rare. And he talks in there about how you should basically diversify your investments and invest in low-cost index funds to get rid of the worry over money. Number 2, money can give you freedom to pursue your passions. Ideally, you want to spend your days engaged in activities you find absorbing and satisfying, that you feel you're good at, and that you feel you're doing good. Indeed, the happiest retirees are typically those who have a sense of purpose, whether it's volunteering for their pet cause, coaching a children's sports team, helping the church, or returning to long-neglected studies. But again, he says, you don't have to be financially independent to have a sense of purpose. If you're young, you can pick a career that's close to your heart. If you're in your 40s and you've been saving for 15 or 20 years, maybe you can afford to swap into a new job that's less lucrative, but more fulfilling. Yeah, right, like podcasting. Or 3, money can buy you time with friends and family. You don't just need a reason to get up in the morning. You need somebody to come home to at night, he says. Studies have found that regularly seeing friends and family can provide a huge boost to happiness. Money helps in this regard, allowing you to go out to dinner with neighbors, travel to see old friends, take your family on vacation, and go to the theater with your spouse. If you don't need to work or only work part-time, that will help further, giving you more hours to share with the folks you like best. And finally, in his final column, he says, but while money makes this all easier, it clearly isn't a necessity. Disgruntled with your lot in life? My advice, forget spending more money at the mall and instead spend more time with friends. Your bank account may still be skimpy, but your life will be far, far richer. Well, let's talk a little bit more about investing now. Let's get back to the core topic of the Mad Money Machine. On April 5th, I watched Mad Money, and Jim Cramer, I guess, worried about the tough times ahead and worried about trying to pick stocks that weren't going to go up, which, by the way, is an indicator that it's time for stocks to go up. He picks a portfolio that he called the Stability Portfolio. And anytime the word portfolio is mentioned, of course by Jim Cramer, I want to keep track of that, right? If he mentions a portfolio, I want to see how his portfolio is going to compare it against all the lazy portfolios that we're looking at. Well, he wanted to pick stocks that he felt were safe. Stocks that have stability. Stocks that have a high enough dividend, and a dividend that he believes is going to not be cut. If anything, it'll be increased. Of large companies that are safe. And he detailed five companies. The first one was Dow Chemical with a 4.2% yield and 65% of its business residing outside of the United States. Then he had Permian Basin Royalty Trust, ticker symbol PBT, which is a U.S. energy trust, split 50-50 among oil and natural gas, and it yields 9.8%. Wow, amazing. The third one is one I just can't believe that you'd want to buy and hold for the long term, but he said World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE, has a 7.8% yield. He said that entertainment giant is a steal. Yeah, well, it also seems very scary and risky to me. The fourth one, CPFL Energia, where it's CPL, is a Brazilian electric utility, and it yields 5.9%. Then the fifth one is HCP, and it has a 5.2% dividend yield. So, of course, I plug these into foliodex.com, and it does, in fact, turn out that this portfolio over the past 3 years, at least, I don't think it goes back any further than that, or maybe it goes back four, but Foliodex only goes three, and then five, and then seven, and ten. The 3 years, it does, in fact, have the highest Sharpe ratio and a very high return annualized over the three-year period. Would I invest my portfolio in entirely in these five stocks? You better bet I would not. But it's interesting to note that these stocks have such a high dividend. And, you know, if you just can't help yourself by having a little bit of money in a mad money portfolio, then maybe putting a little bit of money in these five stocks, tiny little bit of money in these five stocks, could be something to scratch your active investing itch. Well, let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. Well, I have told you about the Microsoft Money stock screener, the mutual fund screener, rather. And I've talked about Yahoo Finance, and I've talked about Google Finance, but I have not talked about the new Google Finance stock screener. And you can find this at finance.google.com/finance/stock screener. Now, I realize that you don't want to be buying individual stocks, but what I'm hoping is that eventually Google will put out a mutual fund screener that has the same functionality as this stock screener. So basically, the bottom line is take a look at the stock screener, get used to its interface, and hopefully when they come out with a mutual fund screener, it'll be easy for you to use. But what you can do in this thing is you can pick the attributes that you want to do a screen for, and it will show you in a graphical display how many companies match those attributes. It's like a little histogram or bar chart, and you can use a slider then. For example, let's say that you wanted to look at the capitalization of certain stocks. It'll have a chart there showing between zero and however many billion. It'll have a bar chart showing how many stocks fit into the various ranges of capitalization. And you can grab the slider there. Say you grab it from the right-hand side and slide it to left. That means you're narrowing down then the number of stocks. You're getting rid of all the large-cap stocks, and you're including only some small-cap stocks in your screen. And you can do the same thing with lots of other attributes like P/E ratio and yield and earnings, on and on and on. The thing I like about the Google Finance stock screener is the interface. It uses the Ajax rich internet application interface right inside of a web page. Doesn't require any sort of plugins, doesn't require any sort of Java, just requires you to have a modern web browser running. Well, that's the tool in the crib for show number 107, the Google Finance stock screener. And like most of the other tools I've given you so far, this one is free. Yeah. All right, just a few other things before I sign off of this show. One thing is I have updated the Lazy Portfolio SmackDown returns as of the end of March. Updated them on April 16th. What the deal is here is Yahoo Historical Quotes doesn't get their updates as to the amount of dividends that a fund pays out until a week or so after that fund pays a dividend. And so a number of people, actually one person at it, diehards, said that their portfolio wasn't calculated correctly. Vanguard did, in fact, distribute a dividend. And instead of minus 0.28%, their return so far year-to-date is minus 1.8%. And, in fact, he is exactly right. I went back and ran the calculation again today, and it is true that his return is minus 1.8%. So I've updated all the other ones. There were maybe a handful or 10 or 12 that updated because of this. And it reorders slightly the ordering of who's doing the best year-to-date. You can see all that at madmoneymachine.com/portfolios. I want to thank you so much for joining me this week as we take a walk together. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes cruising to Bermuda to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, please do me a favor and do yourself a favor, most importantly. Head on over to Index Funds Advisors, IFA.com. First thing to do is take their risk capacity survey. Find out just how much risk you should be taking with your investments. Now, with the market down like it's been, you might think it's a good time to get invested in equities because prices have been higher, right? Well, no one knows where stocks are going to go from this point other than to say that in the long term, long term, 20 years, 10, 20 years, equities have moved higher. And that's what we are betting is going to happen for the next 10 or 20 years, is that they will be higher from this point on. So might as well get invested. And there's no better place, in my opinion, to get invested than with Index Funds Advisors. Some music on this program provided by music.podshow.com. If you have a question for me, if you have a comment for me, if you'd like to just chat with me, I would appreciate all questions, comments, complaints, criticisms, and feedback. Email to me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com, or you can call the voicemail line, 206-734-4763. You can see me out at Twitter, where I will be making, I think, more frequent posts, twitter.com/madmoneymachine. Or, of course, you can make a comment out at the website. Do visit it, madmoneymachine.com. I'll see you next Friday. Have a great week, everybody. Stay invested.